This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
The next year, he played in 62 games for the Cleveland Indians. So he played for both teams. And this year, he now has managed for both teams. And tonight, the Guardians get to go against Terry Francona and his Cincinnati Reds.
Is he the enemy now?
216-474-0092. Let's just throw that out. Is he the enemy?
Is Terry Francona the enemy?
I'll give you the answer to that. You ready for the answer?
I'm trying to. So when I think about that, I never really thought Mike Hargrove was the enemy. I never felt like Eric Wedge was the enemy.
I'll tell you what, man. When Grover was with the Orioles, we were all over that guy. When he went to the Mariners, we were all over him. Way to stop it in the snow, Grover.
Are you still mad about that day?
No.
About that opening game?
Of course not. Grover's our guy.
Yeah, I just like, I have,
Do you have any ill will toward Terry Francona for deciding he had had enough, for whatever reason, of managing the Cleveland Guardians, and then immediately after 1 year, jumping back into it with the Cincinnati Reds?
There's a tiny bit, but it's not very big. It's not, I don't know. There was a philosophical issue to me, at least it felt look, first there was the health. And I think first and foremost, that's the whole reason why he needed a break for a year.
I would agree with that. And financially think, in a position where I'm assuming he could do that. Good for him.
I also feel like there was a philosophical difference between the front office and the manager's
position.
Are
you making that up?
No.
Or do you think that was really there?
I may have been whispered that.
Okay.
And
the philosophical difference was based around what? Playing young guys and
who
analytics?
To play, when to play. You had a chance. You had an opportunity. They traded away the guys that probably could have helped them. What was that? In 23? And maybe they could have made another run. Maybe they could have. And maybe they felt like the front office, I think, felt like they were going one way, and I think he was trying to manage a different way, and I think that's it. Look, I think this happens for every manager in every front office, so I don't think it's unique that they may have had a philosophical difference in the direction of the organization. So, and if that's the case, that's fine. But he, first and foremost, above everything else, I mean, the guy had to miss an All-Star game because of health, too. Remember that? So,
he missed a lot of things because of health.
And so, you know, his health was the most important thing. Without a doubt.
I have, when we talk about animosity toward Terry Francona, I have absolutely none. None.
No, I just think it played out.
Not one bit.
Yeah, if I do, it's a little minuscule. And if they run up the score on the Guardians over the next 3 days, then I'll get mad. But as of right now, I have no reason.
You know what happens if you run up the score?
Nothing.
Pitch better. Stop them.
Yeah, I agree.
I have no problems. In his career, you know, he started with Philadelphia as a manager. Mm-hmm. You know, once his playing career was over, he was in his late 30s when he was with Philly. Mm-hmm. And then took a couple of years off, not by choice, then jumped in with the Red Sox. out with the Red Sox, took a year off, joined our team, was with our team a very long time, 11 years, took a year off, joined another team.
More wins here than Boston, but a better winning percentage in Boston.
And, you know, he did great things in Boston. No problems. I think in pro sports, we all know that managers, that coaches are hired to be fired.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an expiration date on all of those guys. With rare exception. You know, Greg Popovich in the NFL right now. There was an expiration on Andy Reid in Philadelphia.
True.
You know, I mean, Andy Reid's a Hall of Fame coach. Well, it didn't work. I would assume that at some point there's an expiration on Mike Tomlin, on John Harbaugh. But take a look around Major League Baseball now. Man, these guys, Andy, they get...
Was there not an expiration on Marty Schottenheimer a little bit too long?
Absolutely. Yeah, well, numerous times for Marty.
Yeah.
But these guys get bounced like crazy. I do think... Tell me what you think of this.
Horrible idea.
Baseball managers, though they can do a good job and get the most out of whatever it is they're given, might be more dependent on the talent that they're given than any other head coach, manager in pro sports.
Agree.
Do you?
Yeah, because it's not...
It's an individual sport played as a team.
Correct. And that's what I was thinking. I also think that to be a good manager now, you are in the middle of a tug of war between the talent of your players and the expectations and demands of a front office. Like, I feel like the front office probably, especially with analytics, has more power than it's ever had before.
Do you?
Pre-game. Within the game, it's on the manager. I just feel like there's a lot of... And because if you do something in-game that might go against what you're being told from the front office, you better hope it works, right? Because if it doesn't work, then the front office can say, we told you to do this. Analytics told us to do this, and you chose not to. Why? And how many times can you actually do that? That's the harder part. But... So I think that a manager today in Major League Baseball has to be able to, you know, not only manage the players, manage the front office in some ways, be in the middle of that tug of war, and have to produce to continue to win. I don't think it's. And by the way, you've got to be the spokesman for the team because you're talking to the media at least twice a day. So you become in many cases, the manager becomes the face of the franchise.
And you have to represent the front office because they're not out there speaking every day.
No, they do, though. They come out every once in a while.
No, yeah. I understand that, but you're correct. I mean, if you're the manager, you're meeting with the media before the game, you're meeting with the media after the game.
Right.
That's why you look forward to
Sunday, so you don't have to talk to the media.
That's when I look at this matchup tonight as the Guardians getting ready to play the Reds. I think it's interesting that Terry is sitting in the other dugout, but I've never had a big rivalry with the Cincinnati Reds. I mean, National League team, they share. I mean, they're friendly enough to share a facility in Goodyear.
Well, they're not. And I mean, not
the fact
really.
That we're both in the state of Ohio, I understand the natural inclination to want to turn that into some type of a rivalry. I don't think we have anything that resembles a rivalry, really, with the Reds because you don't play them often enough. Bengals, it's a different deal, you know, because they're in the same division and you play them twice a year.
Yeah, I don't have any problem saying this, that when I was a kid, I rooted for the Reds. We never played them. So I didn't have any...
You kind of had a National League team, didn't you?
Yeah, it gave me a team to kind of root for.
Mine was the Giants.
And by the way, the Big Red Machine was a really easy team to like. There were so many great personalities on that team, and you know, in a lot of ways, I don't know, might be one of my favorite teams outside of any team that's played in Cleveland. Because, I mean, that was right in the heart of, you know, me playing baseball as a kid and watching my brother play as a kid and just Pete Rose and Joe Morgan. I mean, how many times did someone in our era step up to the plate and start doing that chicken wing thing that Joe Morgan did, you know, before he hit? Johnny Bench, you know.
It was just a twitch by a muscle twitch.
Maybe. You know, Griffey and Foster and Geronimo. I mean, all those guys. And like I think about them, and I hold them in great esteem because we never played them. Like I never thought about it. And by the way, the Indians weren't very good when they were. So it gave me a connection to baseball that made me want to go, okay, I'm going to root for this other team in Ohio. And it might be one of the few times that I think I've ever felt that way, because you know how I feel about Baltimore and about Pittsburgh. I respect those organizations, but I would never root for them. Makes me ill. Yankees, same thing. Makes me ill.
I just did a Baskin. I just Googled something.
Oh, okay. I'm the only person on earth that uses Google every once in a while.
I just wanted to check on this. Mm-hmm. Longest tenured major league manager right now. I wouldn't have got it either. Kevin Cash in Tampa was hired in December of 2014.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
No manager has been managing a team for more than 10 years?
Yeah. Dave Roberts has been 9 years, I guess.
How long
has Booney? He was hired in November of 2015.
How long has Booney been in New York?
Hold on, I'll tell you.
Booney's Google on in, the radio.
No, I just scrolled. Since 2017. So, you know, that just goes to show you how this works. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons I have no ill will toward Terry Francona at all. He did a great job here.
Does anyone around? I mean,
it was really good. He took some teams that didn't have a ton of talent and yeah. got the absolute most out of them.
Understood veterans, I think.
And yeah, I would agree with that.
I love the fact that he kind of chose to come here. Right? Spent that year at ESPN.
Seemed that way, didn't it?
Took his time off. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, in the beginning, the relationship with him in the front office was amazing. And I think that's one of the reasons
before.
Why.
You know, during his hiatus between, what, Philadelphia and Boston.
I'm not going to lie. I wanted Sandy to get the job. I wanted Sandy Alomar to be the manager. It still wouldn't bother me if Sandy Alomar is the manager at one point.
Might bother Sandy.
Maybe. I don't know. I wanted Sandy to be the manager.
I understand that, and I agree with you on that. That would have been cool, but he didn't, and I don't know that Sandy minds that.
Well, when Tito came in, I didn't think it was that. To me, I was like, okay, I get it. I understand it. And I probably Sandy understood it, too, at that point.
Where does Terry Francona rank in your lifetime, whatever your lifetime is, if you're listening to us, 216-474-0092, on your list of Indians managers or Guardians managers? Where is he? You ponder that, Mr. Baskin.
I am pondering.
We'll give you some thoughts on that when we come back, because you might be surprised. It's Baskin and Phelps right here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Tito did a great job here as manager of this team. But Andy and I were chatting earlier, and we thought, you know, he did a really good job here. Is he the best manager? I'm going to say not your favorite or anything like that. Did he do the best job of managing in your lifetime?
And
whatever your lifetime is, if somebody wants to call. You want to start? You want me to start?
No, you kind of rewrote it for me because you just said straight out best manager.
Yeah, it's not who your pal was. It's like, who do you think did the best job of not best manager, who did the best job of managing this situation, whatever that situation was.
All right, so
for
I'll
instance,
give you,
Manny Acta is not getting my vote.
No, he didn't get mine either.
Do
you just want number one, or do you, how do you want to do this?
Well, we can do a couple. Right. When I started working in town, well, at the time, actually, it was Dave Garcia when I was in college and covering some games. And Dave was a very nice man. But I'm gonna say it was Doc Edwards who started when I started at Channel 43 back in the day. Doc was the manager.
Yeah.
The guy that I think did the best job with what he had to deal with here in town was Mike Hargrove.
Okay.
And that's nothing against Terry. That's nothing against Eric Wedge. It's nothing against Stephen Vogt. I think Grover had the most challenging situation. And before anybody says, well, he had Albert Bell and Sandy and Carlos and Kenny and Jim and Manny, I'll explain. But I think Grover did the best managing job that I've ever seen in this town since I've been working in town.
So I looked at it from a lifetime standpoint. So for me, you look back and you're trying to figure out
You're not going to drop Ken Aspromonte on me, are you?
No. Alvin Dark was the first manager while I was born. Okay. So, and to be honest with you, the first guy I truly remember was Frank Robinson. And so Frank Robinson, you know, obviously would be somebody in there. I just think, but the teams from that era, like at some point, everything had to change. And there is like no question as I look through this list of all the managers that are there, without a doubt, it's Mike Hargrove. Grover was there when those guys were young. He was with them in the minors.
He was there before they were there.
Yeah, and he also understood the city. He understood the town. I mean, think about not only him being a player here, but then coming back and having to manage. I think you and I have said this a zillion times. You know, he had guys that became extremely talented at the major league level while they were here. They didn't, you know, they all didn't start off extremely talented. They had to mature into it, and they had to figure out how to get there. And at some point, when you think about, and think about the players that played for Mike and managing not only them as baseball players, but as egos, like,
That's a huge part of my thinking.
That generation of players, we all know, one, because for the first time for many of us, it was success that we had never seen before. And Grover got it. He understood it. He managed ego. He managed baseball. And he was there in a transitional time that we still benefit from right now. And that goes back all the way to 1991. So I could make the argument for some others in there. And Tito is probably second on that list. But Charlie Manuel is also in there for a little bit. And I still
Charlie did a nice job here.
Yeah, Charlie was fortunate enough to kind of ride the wave of what was kind of disintegrated after Mike left with that great group of players. I was respect, and have, you know, fond feelings for Charlie Manuel, but he's not even in the same ballpark as Grover, because Grover was there to make the transition.
Here. I would agree. Charlie did a great job in Philadelphia. I just got a text from somebody saying, you know, we screwed up Charlie, except he went to Philadelphia and he did a great job.
Oh, he did a great job there. Yeah. No, Charlie was on my list. I had him there. And in fact, I have Charlie behind Terry, behind Tito on this thing.
Yeah. I would say Grover and then Terry Francona.
Yeah.
The one thing about Mike, he took over for John McNamara, and John was a veteran guy who was brought in to, you know, try to get this young crew going. And in 1991, when Grover took over, the guys had really just kind of started to surface on this team. And, you know, like Kenny Lofton wasn't here yet.
Right.
You know, Kenny wasn't on this team. And Mike had a team full of some really talented young guys who he brought along, because, I mean, that year in 91, they won 57 ball games. Mm. I mean, that was awful. I mean, that's terrible. One other thing Mike had to deal with,
yeah,
John Hart.
Yeah.
And though I think the world of John, and I think John did a great job as general manager. John wasn't Chris Antonetti.
No.
John wasn't Mark Shapiro, even though, you know, Mark
John, learned from him, though.
John brought those guys along. But John was front and center. He was the face of the organization. John was out selling it when it needed to be sold. You know, he's going to the Elks Club and meeting with, you know, with 35 people talking about the, you know, Cleveland Indians baseball and trying to get people on board. But there was, I think there was just a little, I won't call it friction, but there was a little bit of with John and Mike.
Why do you think John thought he could manage? Because he did 20
games?
Well,
John did manage.
For 19 games?
John was a minor league manager.
Yeah, and then...
And it was third base coach of the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah.
Under Hank Peters,
right,
when Hank was there. And so I'm sure John thought he could manage. I don't think that he wanted to manage, but because John was the personality that he was, I'm sure John was a little more difficult to deal with than Chris Antonetti, who, you know, Tito dealt with here for most of his run. And I just think overall, Grover just did a phenomenal job and took this franchise from what we always knew it to be, which was a struggling franchise, and made sure that some really good young talent didn't get screwed up, and nurtured it and brought it along. And that's why in my lifetime, and you know, you can go back further than that, you know, Alvin Dark, you know, he was a manager in my lifetime, Frank Robinson, everything else. Grover, to me, did just absolutely the best job. And that's no disrespect to what Terry Francona did here, because Terry had a different set of players and a different set of circumstances, and he did a great job with that. He really did. He did a great job here.
Yeah, I'm also...
But I think Grover just did some unbelievable things here that forever, and you said it, Andy, shaped the future of Cleveland baseball.
Yeah, I don't. I still give... I mean, there's a part of me that saw Eric Wedge do some things that I don't think a lot of people can appreciate while he was behind the scenes.
He was a good guy.
Yeah, especially behind the scenes where he was, you know, he was an old school manager that was trying to do new school things. And I think sometimes they benefited from it at some points. But, it, you know, when it was all said and done, it's just Eric doesn't carry that same, I'm trying to think of the word, not Q score, but that same kind of
cachet
as all the other guys we've been talking
about. I love that word.
Yeah.
Kevin's in Cuyahoga Falls. Kevin.
Hey, Kev.
Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Good.
Yeah, beautiful day in Northeast Ohio.
Hey, man.
Yeah, I'm going to say the whole Cincinnati-Cleveland baseball thing. Andy, I'm going to agree with literally everything you said. And I'm going to say it's probably an age thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think probably guys, you know, 40-something and older are probably going to agree with everything you said, meaning when we grew up, we never played each other ever. I mean, that never happened.
Never.
And I remember my dad, you know, we took summer trips down to Cincinnati, like you said, to watch the Big Red Machine. I mean, that was like fun to do, you know, it's like a little summer getaway, you know, and see Pete Rose and Johnny Bench and all those guys like you named. I mean, you're right. It was like the other team you're allowed to root for, and you didn't have to feel guilty about it. So,
right. That's a good point.
Even in 90, when they won the World Series, when they swept the Brews Brothers, I was elated for him. I was happy, you know, and my buddy went to UC back then. He was actually doing an internship with him and maybe snuck me into a game, you know.
That's a ding. That's a ding.
Yeah, snuck me into one of the World Series
ding.
Games. yeah. I think I was supposed to have sold beer, but somehow I never quite found the rack. So, but anyway, no, I mean, I root for the Reds even to this day because of that. So, yeah, I don't see a rivalry. To me, it's not a rivalry. I know, you know, my boys don't really, they're not as much into the Reds because we play them. So to them, they're like, oh, wait, we play them, guys. We shouldn't be rooting for them. So I think it's maybe an age thing, and that's my take on it. But then,
and Terry Francona being there doesn't make it a rivalry either, does it?
Absolutely not. No. No, not no. That doesn't mean, that's not even a blip to me. Doesn't matter to me.
Agreed with you.
And Jeff, I'm agree 100% what you said about Hargrove. He's my vote for best manager in my lifetime. I mean, if it weren't for Senior Smoke blowing it, we'd be talking World Series winner. But he had two World Series and three playoff appearances on top of that. And let's not forget, remember when he was doing it with our guys, the Yankees were quite a force in the 90s as well as us. So that was a huge rival. I mean, that was, look at that Yankees team we went up against every year in the 90s. I mean, come on. I mean, to me, you're right. Hargrove did the best of what he had. And if John Hart would have just gotten that guy one more pitcher, I swear we could have won it. But whatever it was, John Hart just never wanted pitching in Cleveland. He thought we could out-hit everybody. But it is what it is. Those were great years. I have tons of wonderful memories of being in the stadium in the 90s. And, yeah, Hargrove is my number one manager in my book.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
Justin is in Macedonia, home of the Nordonia Knights. What's up, Justin? Justin, you with us? Nope, Justin just hung up.
Mm.
There you go.
A little stage fright.
I guess so. Chuck's in Lyndhurst. Hi, Chuck. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. I guess my vote would go to Alvin Dark. He was a player's coach. The fans loved him, and he was an asset to the community. I'll sit back and listen.
All right, Chuck. Thank you very much. Apparently winning didn't have anything to do with Chuck's vote. No, Alvin did a great job. He was a good manager. But
is that Chuck Dark, by the way?
Wow, that was not nice.
Well, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. He was 266 and 321.
Well, but he had terrible teams.
Yeah.
You know, this goes back to me thinking baseball, you can only do with what you have. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree.
Alvin Dark had good pitching on those teams back in the day. Tiant, Sam McDowell, I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, that worked out pretty well.
They wore the vest, man. I love
Sonny
the vest.
Siebert.
Right?
Oh, yeah, the red vest?
Yeah.
Yeah, those were sweet. I thought those were really sweet.
That's about all I got. I have visions of baseball cards from those guys. That's about it.
It's interesting to me how we've had two managers that have had pretty good runs here too, as far as like tenure and success obviously leads to that. Grover, Tito, with some guys in between who you thought were pretty good. I agree with you. I thought Eric Wedge did a pretty good job in the early 2000s, and they had some success. I'm surprised Eric hasn't gone on to a longer major league managerial career.
Well, I mean, he was in Seattle for a while there. Then he was went back to Wichita State, went through some issues there. And I think he started managing again this year. I think he's back in college baseball.
Well, I like that. I'm surprised the Major League Baseball didn't really click with him, if you want to know the truth. Because I thought he did a nice job.
He was old school. Like I can tell you, like when he first started, you know, you would expect like he just had an old school mentality where he wasn't afraid to yell at guys, and he didn't care what their contract number was either. He wasn't scared to get into a team's face, even early in the season. Because he knew what the tone was, he knew what things were going to be. I don't know. He's the kind of guy you'd want to play for. I think if you were, like, I don't know that he definitely was a player's manager, but he was he coveted the game, respect the game. You know, it was about he held the game close to his heart. I think that's the way to put it.
You know, Charlie Manuel used to live in Winter Haven, Florida, where the team trained for a long time.
Yeah.
You know how I know that for sure? Because of the return address on the Christmas cards.
Oh, wow,
that
really?
Charlie Ding. Used to send to members of the media when he was manager here. I got it one is. Of those when I went out to my mailbox, and I'm like, what? Charlie sent us Christmas cards.
It is hard to say something mean when you know a person's nice.
Oh, Charlie's a great. Well, Charlie's
right,
a great guy.
Isn't that true though?
Oh, without question.
Charlie, seriously, if you ever had a second to sit down and talk with Charlie, and I thought this was true with Eddie Murray too, it was like walking onto the set of ESPN Classic and listening to someone tell you the story, and you didn't need the video because they could paint the picture. Both those guys could.
I had a thought about this big rivalry. Who are the best players who played for both teams?
Oh, I got
best
couple.
Players who played for both teams. It's the Guardians and the Reds tonight, folks, and we're getting pumped up for it. There's a little trivia about this. Perhaps the two best players who ever played for both of these franchises were high school teammates. It's coming up on Baskin and Phelps. Baskin just looked at me like, huh?
Huh?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hey, everyone. Summer is just around the corner, and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high-quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.